We're back with Fan Pregame 2024 edition. We hope everybody had a wonderful holiday break and a start to this year that's been as good as ours has been. We have had lots of things that we've missed over the break. Winter Classic, PWHL inaugural game, Raptors do a blockbuster trade, Jays are running it back, Leafs wave Samsonov, Canada's out of the World Juniors. Lots of things in the past, but we'll look ahead, which is going to be another busy week, another busy year. We've got Sid and Ovi tonight, 7 p.m. on the network, plus regionally a bunch of games, including Leafs and Kings, Oilers and Flyers, Flames and Wild, and Sens and Canucks. So right back into the thick of it. And before we bring in our guest, of course, Jeff Merrick is usually our Merrick Monday, but, you know, with it being holiday season, we're getting him on a Tuesday. We'll have him next, and then Mike Fiuta around 6:30. Let's talk a little bit more about the Ovechkin season, because I remember when we previewed the very first Sid versus Ovi. It was on our network. It was like earlier in the season, almost one of the first weeks. And there was high anticipation for Ovi's goal chase, and it really has not been off to a great start.
No, it hasn't. It definitely has not. It's funny, though. We're entering 2024, and it is as it was, what, 18, 19 years ago with Sidney Crosby and Alexander Ovechkin headlining things as they are tonight. But, yeah, the big story is the reality, I think, of the reality changing with Ovechkin's goal chase. We know he's having a tough year, 7 goals in 34 games, did score his last time out against Nashville, but he's laboring through just a brutal, brutal shooting season. Career low, 11.32 shots per 60, and the thing that's really fallen off the cliff is just a shooting percentage, 5.5% this year. Usually it's around 14 to 15, so naturally we can go to how that affects the chase of Gretzky. So he entered the season, 822 goals in 1,347 games, at about 0.61 goals per game, 72 goals back at Gretzky. Currently, 66 goals to break the record. But I think the most interesting thing is, like, how is he going to score those goals? At what rate is he going to score those goals? If he does it for his career, it would take about 108 games, which seems doable, right? You just do what you've been doing. 108 games, you break the record, no problem. But at his current scoring rate, it would take almost four seasons, 320 games for him to beat the record. So what's it going to be? Is it going to be the Ovechkin of old? Is it going to be the Ovechkin that we've seen this year? And that just really dictates how long it's going to take. Career rate? All-star break. Next season he does it. If it's current rate, we're talking U.S. Thanksgiving 2027 for him to break the
record.
And
are you, how old would he be there?
42 season. 42.
I mean, I believe in it, but I also believe that father time can come for us all. And when you compare it to where Sidney Crosby has started this season, and he's having one of his best goal-scoring seasons, it's interesting how they're just on a little bit different paths as we look at how this season has begun. Well, let's bring in Jeff Merrick, and we'll lead with that. Merrick, we've got Ovi and Sid tonight on the network. Also, Happy New Year to you, and Merry Christmas, and all of the fun stuff.
Happy New Year.
Yeah. I guess in terms of what Justin was just saying with Ovi's falling. He's got 4 years as his projection. Like, can Ovi A, play 4 years? Yeah. B, is this the real goal scoring rate that we should expect from him? And I guess that goal chase that we had, you know, anticipated being something that propelled us through the season, it's just been a little bit different this year.
Oh, now it's the Austin Matthews chase for Wayne Gretzky, right? Have you already moved aside?
Yes,
Alex Ovechkin pushed him off in the dirt now. Like, day late, dollars short, Ovechkin. Sorry, there's a new mule kicking in the stall here. I'll tell you what, I've made the mistake before of saying that Alexander Ovechkin is washed and he's done and he's not going to catch Wayne Gretzky. So I'm gonna say everything that I'm going to say now is all going to be considered in a lower key. How about that? Like, it doesn't look great right now. And Ailish, I agree with you. Time is a great equalizer and it comes for all of us. But I always come short of saying that it's coming for Ovechkin right now. But there are a couple of things about his game right now that really do give you cause for pause. Oh, just as an aside, by the way, and Ovechkin has been a victim of this as well. Do you know, here's a trivia question for you guys. Do you know which team in the NHL has been the victim of the most goals called back upon review in the NHL this season so far?
The Washington Capitals?
Oh, Ailish, how'd you get it? That was awesome. Yes, with nine.
Yes, I'm so smart.
How many of those belong to Ovi?
Nine times.
Do any of those belong to Ovi?
At least one. Because
at least one?
There's been at least one because it just happened a couple of games ago. Carolina's second, by the way, was seven. But nonetheless, the thing about Ovechkin is, and a lot of people have made this point and have recognized this isn't something that brilliant me stumbled across here. You know, In other games in previous seasons, we've seen even if Ovechkin doesn't score a goal or pick up a couple of points, he does something to impact the game. It's a big hit. It's a big shift. It's a dozen shots on net. Like, there's always been something every time Ovechkin's been on the ice. Like, when you go to watch Ovechkin, either at home or on the road, you know you've seen an Alexander Ovechkin game. The problem is we're not seeing that this season. So it's not just a matter of, well, you know what? You know, Justin, to your point, the shooting percentage is embarrassingly low. That's going to come up eventually because this is how he normally shoots. The fact that he's not doing all of those other things, I think that is leading a lot of people to be a little more comfortable saying, I don't know if we're going to get that Ovechkin that we're used to back anymore. Again, I don't want to say that the guy's washed. I don't want to say that he's done because people have made that mistake before. I've made that mistake before. But at least here we are, you know, 30 games into the season, and I'm saying, I can cover myself here. I'm concerned. How about that one for sitting on the fence? I'm concerned about what's happened to Ovechkin's game right now.
I think fewer are concerned about what's happening with Sidney Crosby's game. I think Ailshi mentioned third best season in terms of goal rate or goals per 60 right now. I don't know if that's out of necessity because maybe it more burden is falling on his shoulders to make sure that Penguins team that isn't all that talented is scoring as much as it needs to. But what are you seeing from Sidney Crosby's season where there are not necessarily more goals, but the goals rate is up and he's influencing the game, not just by total points, not just because he might be in the Selke conversation, but more onus maybe on him to score. Are you seeing something different in Sidney Crosby's game this year?
I'm seeing the same Sidney Crosby, but I'm seeing a Sidney Crosby that seems like he's more determined to try to get this team into the playoffs, knowing that how many more years they're going to have a kick at it with this group. And Dubas made, you know, the big move to bring in Erik Karlsson. Discuss amongst yourselves whether that was the wise thing to do based on what we've seen so far. After all, there was only one puck on the ice at all times. But I think that the Crosby story this year is kind of a story about the Pittsburgh Penguins, and you hate to see the Penguins squander a season like this from Sidney Crosby, because to be honest with you, I don't know how many of these seasons we're going to see anymore from Sidney Crosby. Again, I don't want to pull up and say, like, okay, this is the last time Crosby's going to have a year like this, because after all, he's Sidney Crosby. But, you know, to Ailish's point about father time, it catches everybody. It's caught everybody. No one's escaped those clutches. But I think that you're seeing Sidney Crosby trying to, you know, a determined Sidney Crosby trying to will his team into the playoffs and try to prove to everybody that this team isn't washed. And there's still a lot of there with this Pittsburgh Penguins squad, to the point where I expect on July 1st the Pittsburgh Penguins to announce another contract extension with Sidney Crosby at a probably significant amount. You know, these last two players that we're talking about here, and you know, they're going head-to-head tonight, as you guys mentioned, you know, you could make a case that when you factor in what they've meant to both the franchises that they play for and the league, you know, under which the umbrella they play as well, they may be the two most underpaid players in the history of the game. Like, Sidney Crosby, much like Mario Lemieux before him, saved that Pittsburgh Penguins franchise. And we all are quick to forget how much the Washington Capitals were in dire straits before Alexander Ovechkin came along. I mean, the highlight was, okay, is Jaromir Jagr going to bother to take line rushes in warm-up with the Washington Capitals? Oh, goody, he did. We got to see Jagr do something with the Caps. Like that Washington Capitals team was so far off the hockey map, it wasn't even funny. And then, you know, just, you know, this past season, their attendance, you know, the sellout record was finally ended. But up until then, Alexander Ovechkin made Washington a cool place again and made Washington hockey relevant and put himself on the Mount Rushmore of hockey and earned himself a place in the Hockey Hall of Fame and made hockey relevant in that market. He saved that franchise. So I really think that when you consider how much money Sidney Crosby has put in the coffers of whomever is owning the Pittsburgh Penguins when he plays, you know, Lemieux and Burkle before, and now Fenway Group and Ted Leonsis in Washington, I think they're the two most underpaid players in the history of the game. And, you know, to the point, I know not a lot of people liked hearing Ovechkin say it, but he had a real point how him and Crosby saved the game. I don't know about saved, but I think that they were They were the beginning of the new way to appreciate and market the game. Previously, NHL had only marketed based on team, but you guys remember coming out of the lockout. It was Sid versus Ovi, the HBO 24/7, Pittsburgh and Washington, March to the Winter Classic. It was Sid and Ovi, Sid and Ovi, Sid and Ovi. So now that they're both in the sort of on the shady side of the mountain, not the sunny side of the mountain anymore, I think we should cherish nights like this where we get to see the two of them go head to head again.
Yep,
I don't know that we're going to get dueling hat tricks like we've seen before, but let's cross our fingers and hope there's something good tonight.
67th time, I think, in the regular season, plus about another two dozen in the playoffs for Sid versus Ovi. I say this, or I ask this, with my tongue planted firmly in the cheek, but does Canada and hockey needs saving right now? I mean, that was a tough exit at the World Juniors for Canada. I'm not going to mention, I guess I will mention the word summit, just with, again, the tongue planted firmly in cheek. But what went wrong here? And what is there to explain a down season? Because it just didn't look like it was going to be a World Championship U20 side for Canada this year.
Winning back-to-back is really hard. Three-peating is near impossible at the World Juniors, and that's what Canada was going for. So that's why I'll sort of pump the brakes on the idea that that this country needs a summit. I will say something, though. There's a lot of really good teams out there. There's a lot of countries that have really embraced hockey at the highest level, and the one that I'm going to talk about here is the United States. And like we look at this tournament, the U20, the World Junior Hockey Championships, whatever you want to call it, and you can handicap it pretty easy. So when you get your roster, when the teams are complete, you look at it and you say, okay, which team has the most outstanding 19-year-olds? Because generally that's who wins this tournament. And if you look at America, like Cole Iserman wasn't even invited. He's probably going to go second overall in the draft. Like he was a complete afterthought, right, to this thing. Like it is a murderer's row of 19-year-olds on this U.S. team. They are super elite. They are deep. They are skilled. And the thing about the United States, there's always been a healthy interest in hockey in the United States. Like the great myth is that, oh, only now has the United States stumbled across hockey. It's always been there. But the difference now with the American athlete is generally the elite athletes in the States chose other sports first. They chose football or track and field or baseball or basketball or whatever. And it was, you know, down 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 that you got around to hockey. But now what you're seeing in the United States, and this should scare everybody, not just Canadians, but every hockey playing country in the world. What you're seeing now, and you saw this with Austin Matthews could have played football. What you're getting now is the creme de la creme, the elite level athletes in the United States. Some of them are picking hockey now, and you're seeing it year in and year out. You see it at the draft. You see it in college. You see some of the kids coming up to Canada to play major junior hockey as well, and you're seeing it at the NHL level, and that should terrify everybody. There have been great moments for America in international hockey. 1980 was great. 1960 before that, Squaw Valley was fantastic. 96 World Cup was tremendous. For the United States. But now I think what you're beginning to see, and if we could ever get a best-on-best international tournament, whether it's a World Cup or Olympics or whatever going, I think you'll start to see the beginning of the new great superpower in hockey, and that is the United States, the new chief rival for Canada. So I don't think we need a summit. Like, we can say, listen, no, Connor Bedard could have gone, Shane Wright and Adam Fantilli could have been there, and Kevin Korchinski and Zach Benson and all these. And that's all true, and Sweden will come back and say, well, Leo Carlson's in Anaheim, and we would love him, thank you very much. But three-peats are hard. No surprise. Canada had a hard time scoring goals. I felt awful. Every time you see cutaways to goalie moms when they let in goals, my heart just sort of swells. Like, there's a really special place in heaven for goalie moms. And, you know, when you saw Russo's mom and his whole family there after the game, I'm just like, oh, don't worry. Like, there's a great place in heaven for you because there's no better hockey parent than a goalie mom in the world. But let's pump the brakes on the summit. They lost in the quarterfinals. Good on the check. And now everybody should know how good Michael Hrabal is. Second-round draft pick of the Arizona Coyotes. 6'6", and I can borrow a line from Brian Burke. He has a part-time job as a wall That guy was outstanding today against Canada.
We're chatting with Jeff Merrick, of course, for the Jeff Merrick Show and 32 Thoughts, the podcast. Okay, so a kid that used to play for Team Canada, this is my segue, Cole Perfetti, in the news, of course, with Ryan Hartman getting sticked in the face. And I guess we're learning more information about this, getting blatantly admitted to high-sticking him on purpose. This is kind of like a one-off, and I wonder for you if this situation with being mic'd up is going to be something we learn more about, if this is a punishment that is like going to be written into the rule book of how you can use audio that's being mic'd up. It's very interesting. I wonder.
It's already in.
Yeah.
It's
okay. So how does this happen?
It's already in.
Okay.
So, okay. Mm-hmm. Let me see if I can set the stage here. So this past weekend, Minnesota and Winnipeg had a particularly violent couple of games. Now there's been eruptions between these two teams before. I think it's one of the great untold rivalries in the NHL. Whenever I mention it, people look at me and say, you watch too much hockey. Like, no, that's not a huge rivalry in the NHL. I'm telling you, Minnesota and Winnipeg is. And we saw evidence of it on the weekend. And congratulations, Winnipeg took two. This was rough. Mm. Like, this was Dylan on Kaprizov, and that was bad. And Hartman on Perfetti was a reaction to it. So what happened in game two, and he essentially told the kid, like, look, you're going to get this, all right? Like, you guys took out Kaprizov. I'm going to take a smack at you. And off the draw, Ryan Hartman smacked Cole Perfetti in the mouth. Now, interesting, someone told me today that because he had his mouth guard in, he didn't lose all the top row of his teeth. But if he wasn't wearing a mouth guard, his entire top row of his teeth would be in jeopardy. Now, Cole Perfetti was wearing the mic. He was mic'd up for this game. When that happens, everybody on both teams are told who's wearing the mic, i.e., be careful what you say. Either Ryan Hartman did care or forgot, but he pretty much indicated, apparently, allegedly, to Cole Perfetti that was payback for what happened with Dylan and Kaprizov. Now, we'll circle this back to 2005. At the end of the 04-05 lockout, they had asked the players to wear mics as a way to help market the game. A whole lot of pucks in deep. Here we go, boys. Come on, boys. Establish a forecheck, boys. Here we go. Here we go. Quick feet. Quick feet. That kind of stuff that we all love, apparently. But one of the deals was the Players Association said, okay, we're fine with having our athletes mic'd up, but nothing that you capture can be used in circumstances of discipline, i.e., you can't use this when you're suspending a player. Mm. That was a concession, and that was the agreement made between both sides. So as much as people may find that distasteful, that was the agreement that was made between the NHL and the Players Association to get the mics on the players.
But it is out there. And Hartman, I mean, repeat offender. Now we know about this. If we're doing first degree, whatever you want to call it, like, there was definitely intent there.
Inadmissible.
But if and when there's another incident with Ryan Hartman, this might just be remembered that this was planned the way it was. So we'll see what happens. I mean, he continues to But I mean, you're piling up the offenses. Go ahead, Jeff.
You are. And listen, I was going to say Ryan Hartman's no choir boy here. Like, he plays a rough and at times nasty brand of game. Not that I, try to encourage this kind of behavior, but I think it's important to share with your viewers and listeners that the next game between these two is February 20th. I don't know. You want to maybe make sure that you're...
got that one circled.
And I hope Hartman's available for that one. I think it'll be a little bit more interesting.
No, suspended or injured.
If he is.
Yeah.
Another one on Sportsnet tonight. Sportsnet 1, Edmonton visiting the Philadelphia Flyers. John Tortorella is getting a lot of buzz for things like the Jack Adams and just in general the job he's doing in Philly. So what's separating him from others that have failed with Philadelphia of late? Or why is it working right now for John Tortorella? What holes has he patched up with the Flyers?
It's a great question, and I don't think it's just John Tortorella. I think it's Dan Hilferty and Keith Jones and Daniel Briere. Like, it's interesting when you see like a team really hitting its stride. Like, they're not hitting the stride like they're going to compete for the Stanley Cup. Like, the Philadelphia Flyers are not anywhere close to that. But as far as being an organization that's in sync and has all the right people in place and are hitting all the right notes, Philadelphia has it right now. Now, you might make the argument, and I'll listen to it, if you say that John Tortorella is the wrong coach for a rebuild because he's taken the Philadelphia Flyers right out of the lottery. But having said that, if you've watched the World Juniors and watched Team USA, you know how good Cutter Gauthier is, and he's on the horizon, to say nothing of Matvei Michkov, who may take longer to get to the NHL, but they've got a couple of future stars right there. I think what Tortorella's done is, I think that John Tortorella always does well when he has a group that is preconditioned to listening to their coach and will do things that the coach says. Like, I don't think it worked in Vancouver because there were already too many players that were too well established. And I'll think of the Sedins specifically. Like, John Tortorella wanted the Sedins to do things that the Sedins just don't do. Hey, Henrik and Daniel, why aren't you blocking shots? We're the Sedins. You don't want us blocking shots. But John Tortorella has a group of the Philadelphia Flyers that have bought into this idea. And first of all, he's completely selling the underdog role to all of these guys. Philly versus the world. Everyone's written us off. Like, they're using... Did you see the Philadelphia Flyers commercial where they use a drop from Elliot Friedman on 32 yep. Thoughts where he says, Jeff, you were right about the Flyers and I was wrong. This team is... They grabbed that. I texted some of the Philadelphia Flyers. I'm like, what do you think? And he's like, we love this. We think this is hilarious. But that's... Like, that's the message to all these players. And the first time that I saw it was the beginning of last year at training camp. So Cam York is a first-round draft pick of the Philadelphia Flyers a few years ago, expected to make the team right out of camp last season. That's all everyone talked about. And he got cut. And Igor Zamula ended up staying up, and Cam York went down to the American Hockey League. Everybody was stunned. And John Tortorella went out of his way to bury the kid. And what that was a test. And John Tortorella tests players all the time. What he wants to do is find out who wants to be there and who's going to quit. He gave Cam York every single opportunity to wilt. Instead, he went down to the American Hockey League, and within 25 games, he was back up. And John Tortorella, at every single chance, spoke glowingly about this kid. In his mind, he had passed the test. There was this expectation. Kid didn't get it. Down to the American Hockey League, a lot of kids would have boo-boo face about that and would sulk and would whine and would complain about that. But York didn't. Tortorella loved it. Now he goes out of his way to praise the kid. He understands that there's about an 18-inch difference between a pat on the back and a kick in the ass. And he knows when to do both. But you have to have a team that's receptive. And he's got it in Philadelphia. And he's getting good goaltending, too. That doesn't hurt.
Yeah, we're going to talk about goaltending in our next half hour as we preview the Kings and the Leafs. But we'll leave it at that. Jeff, quickly, you get 30 seconds to give me your PWHL inaugural game thoughts from yesterday. I know that's not enough time, but that's the way the TV rules work.
That's okay. I loved it. I think you should have the lead voice on this one, Ailish, really. Like, I was so happy, but honestly... On this topic, on this show, you should have the lead voice. So let me flip it around. Ailish, you're a big part of the foundation for things like this. What did you think of it?
Yeah, it was really emotional, honestly. Like, I was there yesterday, of course. I got there early. I got to talk to Billie Jean King. So that probably set me emotional to start because she's such an icon. And I just sat there in the stands and I had a reflective moment because I saw, like, the older generation. I feel bad saying that. But us kind of sitting there, we've already passed on the torch to these little girls that were up on the glass with signs that said, thank you for doing this. Like, my first PWHL game, and I was sitting there, and I, luckily my friend hadn't arrived yet, and I was getting emotional watching because it really felt like this was the start of something special, and I really do believe it was. And, you know, colleagues from all the networks there working together was really special. Yeah. Players that I used to play with at college in like York Simcoe Express, like people that you grew up playing with were all there, all taking it in together, and it was awesome. And the caliber was incredible. The physicality, Jeff, like, girls, we're throwing punches. Like, it was aggressive. I was glad I wasn't playing, but it was really awesome. Yeah. You know, it continues on tonight, of course, but... Yeah, I'm really excited to follow the season. I know you had Haley on today, and she was such a great voice, too. So it's been really great. It's only been one day.
I know. And tonight we get a big 8,000 sellout in Ottawa. It's Ottawa facing off against Montreal. We'll be eyes peeled for number 23 out there tonight, Ambrose. And we're cheering it on. Like the one thing, I said this afternoon, the one thing that I really appreciate about this is it's the beginning of the end of a narrative. Mm-hmm. And the narrative is, oh, the women's game, oh, they're playing like minor midget level for the boys and all that. Listen, now for the first time, girls are going to be able to go from college right into a pro game.
Awesome.
So it's not like you have two part-time jobs and you're juggling all this.
Yep.
Because the question was always, how good can women be at this game? The answer has always been, we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now we're starting to be able to find out.
Yeah, it's going to...
The voice is yours on this one,
Ailes. Oh, well, I appreciate that, Jeff. I'm real excited for the rest of the season. And I'm going to say it, I'm a Montreal girl. Like, I know I'm living in Toronto, but...
One game and you're out, eh?
I claimed my allegiance early on, but I got to say it again, before they even have their first game, I'm Team Montreal this year. I'll be the villain on the network here. It's okay. It's all right.
Ailish, that was more than 30 seconds.
Yeah, I know. I've already been told you got to get off the air. They're cutting this, but it was worth it. You know what? If it's about women's hockey, you know, we're going to bend the rules here. Well, Jeff, appreciate your time, as always. Happy New Year, and we'll chat with you next week. Thanks so much.
Best to you guys as well. Health and happiness to all your families.
Appreciate that. You as well. Jeff Merrick, of course, the Jeff Merrick Show, and 32 Thoughts of Podcast. We're getting a little bit close to having to go off the air, but that was really sweet. I did get a chance to chat with Billie Jean King. Mm-hmm. It's in our podcast feed. It's about a 7 or 8 minute clip, so maybe we can play a little bit after the break. But we're gonna chat with Mike Fiuta on the other side and tee up Leafs and Kings tonight. That's regional. It's at 10:30 p.m. That's all next. We're back on the Fan Pregame, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, for the next half hour. As a reminder, we got Edmonton and Philly. That's regional. We've got Calgary and Minnesota, regional. Ottawa, Vancouver, regional. Leafs and Kings, which are going to tee up next, is also regional. But the big one on the network, Washington and Pittsburgh, 7 p.m. across Sportsnet. Mike Fiuta joins us now. Mike, I was just at your old barn at St. Mike's the other day. Love that place. I was out ripping around at an alumni game. But it's like a historic barn that I think has a... I mean, I'm walking around the halls. Lots of history. They don't even put up the names of the players anymore because there's no room.
Run out of wall.
Yeah.
Anyways, Happy New Year to everybody. Yeah, it's an iconic building for a lot of reasons. I mean, I used to play for a high school called Henry Carr, and that was our number one rival, which when they used to have a junior B program in and through to the high school. And then to be fortunate enough to be a part of the tradition, I mean, I saw Rod Seeling was out there the other night at the Leaf game. I got to see him. Just the amount of alumni there is amazing. But the one thing that absolutely amazed me was I was coaching the St. Mike's Majors, and these guys are monsters, and that rink is so small.
Yeah.
You see life pass before your eyes. Like, you think it's all cool being on the bench as a head coach in the Ontario Hockey League, and then you see these guys come by, and you're like, this isn't worth it. I remember that I had, Sheldon Keefe. I had some pretty interesting players, but it's such a small barn that you have to keep your head up and your reflexes, or you're going to be unconscious. That's for sure.
Yeah, I think they used to do the BioSteel events with Connor McDavid, and there'd be like 40 NHL players on the ice at a time, or at least seemed that way. And it was like, there's not enough room for these guys. They're going to run into each other. I guess that's why they probably went.
WWE Battle Royal.
the Royal Rumble at St. Mike's. Okay, we mentioned we got Sidney Crosby versus Alexander Ovechkin for the 67th time, at least in the regular season. tonight on the network. Maybe a tough question for you, Mike. Who are you taking? Height of their power, Sidney Crosby or Ovi?
I've got my Canadian hat out, and I'm going with Sidney Crosby. I can't help it. And I love, I mean, what Ovi's brought to the table. But I think for me, and I talked to Justin Williams about this because he played with Ovi. Ovi was quite an individual player who hadn't really bought into the team concept for a lot of his career, and that didn't make him any less iconic. But he really started to buy into the importance of team, and I think that was at its best, on its best, when they did win their Stanley Cup, and you saw his passion, you know, as a Russian player winning the Stanley Cup, and I think he had it in a fountain for a couple of days after that. But Crosby's just brought it ever since day one, and being a Canadian icon and the pressure that went with him, this is the professionally, you saw him go from a little bit whiny when he started just to the ultimate consummate pro. And he's one of my favorite players of all time. And again, he adjusted his game to play away from the puck, everything else. So I'm going to go with Crosby on that one.
It's too bad we don't have a time machine to bring him back to a World Juniors age right now. They could have used him a couple hours ago.
Right now, with all the stuff going on, I mean, I watched the women's game yesterday and just to see all those bright, shining faces. I couldn't believe the contact. Hey, like I say, you're talking about it. Like, there are people getting blown up out there. And the goalie, I mean, if this doesn't work out with Hildeby, I would have a look at the New York goaltender. Like, I had a whole different thought, and this is not, this is my naivety, because I've got many friends that are professional women, like from Haley to Wick, and I've so many great hockey players. But I had the fortune of coaching in a celebrity challenge game in Owen Sound for Hockey Week in Canada. Yeah. And I ended up, I had two female goaltenders. And I'm thinking, you know, they've got Darcy Tucker and these things. And I had her, and they were unbelievable, like unbelievable how athletic. And these, it got heated near the end, and Tucker came in and he didn't let up, and she just robbed him. And I was just like, you saw that crazy Darcy Tucker maniac in a charity game because he got robbed by an incredible female goaltender. But no, lots of fun. And then obviously disappointing this morning, but that's become, you know, the Canada things come such a crapshoot. And again, I would agree with, I listened to your talk with Jeff Merrick there. It is heart-wrenching how it's become about filming the parents and seeing their joy, and then to go right from a goal that had nothing to do with the goaltender. I mean, it hit every stick in the place and then goes inside post out. And the first thing you do is show the family in, you know, with their head buried in there. So I'm not a big fan of that. I mean, I've been on the other side of the camera now, and you can do without some of that BS, but you know, it's a tough game, and anytime you go down to a one game shootout or one game crapshoot, and it's not always going to be the best team that wins. But good on the Czech Republic, and hopefully, you know, Canadian can bounce back. And it was you know, it's just a tough tournament to win altogether.
Well, I'm glad that you played or saw some some women goaltenders, and now you know why I only got one professional goal, because they're so good. Like, they're just like, it was not my fault. I just, you know.
There's like two studs per team, isn't there, too?
It's hard, more teams, okay? Just for the That's goals. Why I had to retire, everyone.
Watching the shots and the caliber of the save and the shot, it was just like, and tight, too. Like, I mean, not floundering around or looking like rebound control, everything. And it's not being naive, but I was just amazed at that goaltending performance yesterday. Like, I was surprised. I know somebody, the player of the game, got a goal and an assist or something. Mm-hmm. I was like, I thought the player of the game was the New York goaltender.
Definitely.
And it was fun. It was a lot of fun to watch.
It's going to be great to follow. And I think it's going to be awesome for people to meet and see different places like that aren't always on Team Canada or always on the American team, because this is what this league's about. You get to see the kids right out of college that are that good.
The smiles on faces, and it's the first time ever that I've got enough friends that call me trying to pick my wallet for Leaf tickets and NHL tickets. But now I've got my buddies that have daughters saying, okay,
good luck.
Where's your contact into the old Maple Leaf Gardens there? And I know, I looked at the price on StubHub, and they're not, they're going to be getting their own tickets on their own.
There you go.
Sure.
That's every game sold out. So only resale.
That's awesome. It was a good investment.
It was. I got seasons. So, you know, we can discuss. Maybe I can resell them to your friends.
I'll have my accountant call your account.
There we go. Okay. So you did mention Hildeby, and of course, there's big decisions looming with Samsonov, Hildeby. We did hear from Brad Tree Living earlier today that the Samsonov won't practice with the Marlies this week. He'll take a little bit of time for a mental and physical reset. So I wonder for you, we'll focus on the Samsonov of it first. What does he need? Is it AHL games? Is it a new city? Is it some time to figure it out? Because what we hear is that practice, he looks great. He's tactically sound, that he's making really great saves. But when he gets into the game, it's obviously a completely different story for the fact that he's now been demoted and was cleared on waivers. So I wonder for you, what is the next step for Ilya Samsonov?
Well, it's for me, it's so much about mental health, and it's a real thing. I mean, we saw it with Jack Campbell, you know, and Jack was always for me. I mean, obviously, I loved Jack as a kid, and, you know, we got him from Dallas, and he was really down on himself. And Bill Ranford did a great job with him and kind of built him up to the fact that he was really hanging with the Leafs and doing exceptionally well. And then you see how his, they don't just forget the position, mm-hmm. but mentally it's got to be when you're, it's unbelievable to watch. Like I'm watching Samsonov, who, you know, used to come out and meet the media, you know, and say, hey, the sun's going to shine tomorrow. And he just looks lost, absolutely lost. And it's, and I don't know, especially when you say, hey, this guy's having, he's lights out in practice. Mm-hmm. And then he goes into a game and it's just the bright lights, big city. It's just a very, it's a tough enough position to play without having to play it in Toronto. And I think that's why when you look back at those teams, and I almost think you have to develop your own. I mean, I hope that this Wall guy turns out to be the real deal when he's healthy. But you see these teams, to play in these markets, it's so difficult. And that's what, to me, makes it even more amazing what a guy like Curtis Joseph was able to do in the bright lights in big city, because he was just lights out. And that's the stuff, that kind of stuff never got to him. And hopefully one of them finds it. I know I'm good friends with Tree. I mean, coming into the season, you'd probably not think, if you thought you were coming into Los Angeles and you're going to have Martin Jones and Hildeby as your selections, it's just, it's a tough game to figure things out. It's almost like when you're looking at, I saw a thing yesterday about this, who started the league as quarterbacks in the NFL, and now this is there. And it's such an important position. And I think particularly this Leaf blue line is got some holes. It's got some, you know, it's come around a little bit. I think, you know, some of their players are better, but it's what, it just doesn't match up right now. And Brad knows there's some work to be done there. And that's why when you see these great teams like Colorado that has an amazing back end, and then Vegas last year, that you can put in a guy like Aiden Hill, and he was very good. But with that kind of structured defense in front of us, I know we did it with Los Angeles, although we had Jonathan Quick. But you see, you know, Carolina, for example, when they are on their game with that defense core, you can put a guy like Kochetkov in, who I thought was very good the other night, but it's so much easier to play the game when you've got that kind of defense core in front of you. And it'll be a big test for them tonight, because Los Angeles is a very deep team right now. They've done an incredible job managing their assets. I look at that and I see, selfishly, I know I was there for 14 years and I was laughing. I want to go off on a tangent, but Kaya, your dad was like a iconic good luck charm on our Stanley Cup. Because he was like, it's not only do I think he's the GOAT at what he does, but he was undefeated at games that involved the Kings in our Stanley Cup run. And I told him that when I'd walk in the building, I'm the most superstitious guy at that stage. I'm like, we're good. We're good.
Sounds like there should be a Stanley Cup ring in, yeah, the safe in their house.
Well, my daughters are pretty much claim those two. I've got three daughters and two cup rings, so I've got issues going on with that. Bringing that into the mix. But you look at the Kings, how they're built, and even after they left, Mark Eynetti and his staff, they've drafted so exceptionally well that they're allowed to take players. Like when we won in 2012, we felt Mike Richards was going to put us over the top, and we had to give up Wayne Simmonds and Braden Schenn to get him. So we weren't giving up, you know, which you don't want, something you'd want to give up to get a great player. And that's why I find it so fun in Toronto at times when they, you know, I used to have friends call and say, okay, we've got Doughty. Will you guys give up Engvall and a fifth? Like the Toronto trade market is so out of control with what they think the Leafs should be giving up and what they should get back. And you see now with Blake having the ability to trade, like you see this Faber kid who's up for rookie of the year. That's a second round Los Angeles Kings player that they turned into Fiala. Right. And now you see them that have the ability, whether you like the trade or not. I'm not a big fan of it, but to turn Gabe Vilardi and Alex Iafallo and the Finnish player there, Kupari, into Dubois, that's amazing to have that kind of currency to add older, more veteran players to give you a chance to win. And that's what worries me a little bit about this Leafs, although I do think Brad Treliving works magic. He did it at the deadline, whether you like it or not, but to lose all those guys and then to be able to bring in Markstrom and Tanev and Uyghur and those guys at the last second, and even Huberdeau the year before, you know, Kadri comes in, and now he's in a situation that he hasn't been left a lot in the cover, right? And that's pick-wise, and you can argue asset-wise. I guess Easton Callum looks like he's going to be a very good player, and Minton, when he's on, looks really good. But there's not a lot of people. And the other thing when you're trying to make trades to get better, you always love your own prospects, and you got to find somebody on the other side of the table that loves – that really values them as much as you do. So it'll be interesting. It'll be a big test. I'm a little concerned I was spoiled rotten when I lived in Los Angeles, because when our games ended, your day ended. And now you've got to, I mean, you guys get to sleep in now with your new hours. Anytime you got to stay up at 10:30 to watch a game that you're excited about, it kind of caves in your next day. But hopefully they don't disappoint us. This will be a real big test for the Leafs.
Yeah, it will. It's definitely one to have circled on the calendar. I want to get to the other parts of the goaltending situation, more specifically Hildeby. But I do want to ask you about Martin Jones, because Martin Jones is kind of, despite all the spotlight, kind of been silently doing his job for this Maple Leafs team, which is more of a job than I think anyone expected, given what's happened to the goaltending situation. But you mentioned you know Tree well, you know Martin Jones really well. What about Martin Jones made him right for a job where he wasn't promised anything, but he could actually fill the starter's role right now, maybe just temporarily? But it has been something that's really helped the Leafs tread water here during a difficult time.
Well, quietly, he's been there, done that guy. Like, he was our backup when we won the Cup in 2014 with the Kings. And quick, he got hurt for an extended period. And I think Jonesy went 12-2. He went to a point that, like, we had an opportunity to sign him for a 3-year deal. And all we had to do, he'll get a kick out of this, because Daryl Sutter, we had to convince Jonesy that he was going to get a certain amount of games. And we asked Daryl, how many games is Quickie getting next year? And he said 82. So Jonesy saw the writing on the wall that he wasn't going to get his game.
Just play ball, Daryl.
So Jonesy ended up getting flipped to Boston and then ends up in San Jose. And he's looking straight at us and beats us out in the playoffs the following year, and became a really, like, that was one position San Jose for years did not have to worry about, because Jonesy was that good. Now, obviously, you get a little bit older, playing in a Canadian market, something different. But I applauded Tree when he brought him in just for this very reason, because, you know, I thought it was a great pickup. And first, he lost his game in Philly, but for a guy like that, he still has an opportunity to find his game. And he's used to those big Stanley Cup moments and being in those kind of big games and being a big part of it. So I don't think the Toronto wrecking ball of stress is going to bother a guy like Jonesy. He's a very amicable guy. And I think he's big. And I think if Wall doesn't get, you know, back to where he needs to be, that I think Jonesy's very capable of giving them an opportunity. But that would probably, for me, make it even more important to add another defenseman, minimum one defenseman. And I think I've talked about it forever, and it's not a secret, because Tree had him in Calgary. I think Tanev is a perfect fit for what they need. I don't think they need any more offense on the back. And he's just that kind of warrior that the Leafs need, and he's a right shot D that doesn't – I just – it's amazing. But I also think that it's a harder trade for Tree. Like, everybody's saying it's an easy, like, Tree, it's an automatic trade for him to make. Calgary Flames and their ownership aren't going to do any favors. I would actually think the price is higher out of the fear of losing a trade to Brad Treliving and the Toronto Maple Leafs. So I don't think it's as easy to acquire the players, as even though they're a great fit. I think he's going to have to pay more than your average citizen to get a fit like that.
Maybe the Treliving tax, the unfortunate Treliving tax that he might have to pay. I don't know how well you know.
That in like 800, a bunch of throwing a couple Boston pizza franchises.
There you go, actually. You know, those will pay for himself.
Go off the table and get creative.
I don't know how well you know Dennis Hildeby himself, but the idea of bringing up an AHL goalie in this situation, I mean, a lot of people are speculating, like, oh, you can't break the kid if he has a bad game on this road trip, but he's there. And I wonder for you if a situation of having to pull from the AHL to bring up a guy who's having a really great career but hasn't played many professional games, right? Like, he's still young in a sense. So is there any concerns with bringing him up? Is it just time to throw him in the fire and see what he can do?
Well, I don't think they have a choice, Ailish, and it's not and it's happened before where it's worked. I mean, last year I was speaking to some people really tight in the Leaf organization that really thought that Wall last year, based on how well he had played in the American League, should have got a longer look to be the guy for the Leafs last year. So depending on the makeup of the, I mean, first time I saw him without a mask was getting interviewed in Los Angeles, and he looks happy. He looks like, he looks like one of those guys that it's not going to eat him up, but the caliber of hockey is so much far different. And that position is one that, you know, you've got to almost get off to a good start. I think if you get shelled early, it takes a lot longer for a guy that hasn't played at that level to find it. But, you know, he's a little bit older. I'm sure they've done their homework on him. But it's not ideal. Like, who's kidding who? When you're going into your five hole and you're hoping that he's going to have the same success he did in the American Hockey League on a team that has Stanley Cup aspirations, it's not ideal. But for him, you hope he does well. I mean, the Toronto fans, I've been quite a few live games down this year, and they can turn in a hurry, and they're striving for success. And I think the one thing that you've got to look at too is, I heard you talking about capitalizing on another great Sidney Crosby year. Mm. You don't want to have too many non-playoff successes anymore with this core that the Leafs have, because they are clearly elite, and you got to have some success and stability on, especially on the back end. Like Gio, I love Gio. I mean, he's one of my favorite players in hockey, but you can't have Mark Gio. You're not getting the A game out of Mark Gio if you got to play him 27 minutes. It's just, he's Will will do it, but there's guys that are getting older that you've got to capitalize on this window. I mean, obviously I heard that there's a chance Nylander is going to get a contract. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. They need players like that, but they need to find some guys in the back end to bring some stability. And then you got to cross your fingers that Wall's the real deal, or one of these guys can find lightning in a bottle in order for them to have success against teams like Carolina and Florida's playing hard this year. And just these teams like you're going to see tonight. Like, I think tonight is going to be a huge test because the guys will be up for Jonesy. Jonesy will be up for the boys. Los Angeles lost a tough one the other night. Leafs lost a tough one to Carolina. And I think it's going to be a really, really good test for them going into Los Angeles.
Yeah, last one for you here, Mike. Let's talk about the Kings. Just kind of thinking about them today, and it was like, yeah, that was a really, really quick rebuild. And looking at the numbers and looking at the seasons, it wasn't as quick, but they did get it done and get to a competitive window before Drew Doughty and Anze Kopitar were, you know, on the shady side, I believe is what Jeff Merrick said earlier today. Did they like set the roadmap for the retooling? Like, did they do something that teams are going to be copying, or did, you know, they just kind of do it the way others did it, but they just did it more effectively, or they just leaned on the guys like Anze Kopitar and Doughty to kind of travel or carry them through, shepherd them through a couple lean seasons?
Well, I don't want to throw too many compliments because they did fire me. I'm going to tell you that I think Rob Blake matured in a hurry. Mm. I think he was, and I think he'd be the first one. He was overwhelmed early. I think anytime your whole life changes, going from a guy that's in control of your whole self as a player to now you got Luke Robitaille in your office, you don't like talking on the phone, but that's part of the job. And I think that he stuck with it and he started putting into that role the same commitment that he did as a player. And now when you do that and you've got that natural hockey knowledge and now you surround yourself with, you know, he's got Nelson Emerson and Glenn Murray around him. And I think the biggest thing, and I know general managers get credit for drafts, and it's not functional. Like Dean Lombardi, Mark Eynetti and I ran the draft, right? But if the general manager should get credit, because if they don't turn out, they don't come looking for myself and Mark Eynetti, the general manager takes the heat. But in Los Angeles, Mark Eynetti and his staff, not only did he, like, we had like 16 homegrown guys on our Stanley Cup group, right? And the back end had such a blend that you all of a sudden, and one of the biggest trades we made, and it was Dean, was brilliant. We traded Vishnovsky for Jarrett Stoll and Matt Green. In our dressing room, we had literally probably 15 captains in our room, right? Dustin Brown was wearing the C, but you got Mike Richards, Jeff Carter, Matt Green, Justin Williams. Your leadership core is off the charts who we had. And those guys were strong enough to deal with Daryl. And he taught them how to win, and then they took it to another level. Now, this group right now, as I said, not only the assets that they've got there, like they've been patient with Byfield. Like if Byfield was struggling that way in a Canadian market, they might have said, wow, you know, we've lost one here. We got to move him out. They've been patient with him. And now you're starting to see reap the benefits of how well he's playing. You know, they were patient with Adrian Kempe, who was scoring 15, 20 goals a year. And now it's 34 a year because they stuck to their guns. And I think I'm glad too that a lot of markets, when they struggled, would have moved on from Todd McLellan. And I think he's the right guy for this group. So patience and exceptional drafting by Yank and his staff. And then on top of it, I think Rob has really made some significant moves to add pieces that you just can't eat it. Like Fiala is a great fit for them. The one that just blew me away is this Gavrikov. Like, he's exactly what the Leafs need for me only in a right and an ideal word, he's a right-handed shot. Like I talked to the guys, he's got them dancing in the dressing room after victories. Like it looks like even Kopi said the other night on After Hours.
Mike, great answer. Yeah. Lots of compliments. We're up against time.
We definitely
appreciate you come on. We got to do this again because we got more stories and we might have to bill you for a Stanley Cup ring at some point.
Absolutely. Well, thanks. Happy New Year, Ian. Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate it. Thanks so much, buddy. Yes, he's talking about Leafs and Kings. That's up at 10:30 regional. Lots to go through there. He did mention the William Nylander comment that was on Kipper and Bourne. Kipper saying they're hearing 8 by 11:25.
We have to chew on that tomorrow, I think.
We'll be back tomorrow with more. That was Fan Pregame. Thanks, everyone.